Podcast. I'm your host, Mari Riesberg. Over the past several years, I've combined my degrees in acting and somatic psychology to share my sustaining creativity techniques with performers, and now I've decided to share it with a bigger audience that includes you. I believe we are all creative, and this podcast is all about that. I'll be interviewing people from all backgrounds, ages, and creativity experiences to share just how creative we all are. Today, I'll be chatting with Megan O'Russell. She is the author of several young adult series that invite readers to escape into worlds of adventure. She is also a professional musical theater performer whose work has taken her across North America. Please enjoy Megan O'Russell. So welcome to the Sustaining Creativity Podcast. I am here today with Megan O'Russell. She is a YA author, young adult, I guess I should specify, young adult author and actor here chatting with us today. And I'm super excited to have you because you have quite the epic stories to share. And I'm, really excited for you to be here. So welcome.
Well, thank you so much for having me on the show.
Yay. And why don't you just take a minute or five and let our listeners know who you are and what you do.
Sure. So I am a professional musical theater performer as my day job, which is weird. I am also a young adult author, and I write books that go from dystopian to epic fantasy. And being in theater and being a performer has sort of been a lifelong thing for me. I've always done it. It's just what I do. But being an author started about 10 years ago. And it was one of those crazy things where you come up with this dream and the dream sort of seems like it's going really well until you just kind of like get smacked in the face. So it sort of started like a Cinderella story where I was like, I'm going to write this book and this is going to be great. And it was weird because I submitted it. And usually you hear like, oh, you're going to submit for like a year and a half and then maybe someone will take you. Mm-hmm. But I started submitting and basically right away I got offered a publishing contract. So that was great. And it was, like 9 years ago, 8 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so it was back when you would have like a phone call with your publisher and then they'd mail you a contract. And between when I spoke to the publisher on the phone and when the contract came in the mail, they had shut down.
Oh my God. that's awful.
Luckily, I had only told like my mother and my roommates in cast housing. So I didn't have to like post on Facebook and be like, you know, that publishing contract, never mind. Yeah. So that old superstition of like, don't say anything till the paperwork comes, it works out in your favor sometimes.
Right.
So I started submitting again because I'm obstinate and I got another publishing contract. And this time I actually got the papers in the mail, signed the papers. I went through a couple round of content edits and some line edits and had like a book cover and a release date and like a blog tour scheduled. Mm. And then I find out that publisher is shutting down and the FBI is involved. So that's...
Holy hell. What?
Yeah. Apparently the woman who ran the publisher didn't actually exist.
Oh my God.
Like it was some weird, like they're going to chase a fake passport to find this lady. And I'm lucky because I hadn't actually been published. So she didn't owe me any money, mm-hmm. but there were some authors who were out so much money and they didn't know who the publisher had actually been.
Oh my gosh, so there's like terrible, but
this white collar crime investigation going on. So that was fun.
You see, and I had a pretty positive attitude now, maybe not so much in the moment.
Well, I just sort of like sat on the couch and I was just like, everything, my whole body just felt empty. And I was like, well, this is a weird experience. Mm-hmm. I can't feel my hands right now. And luckily I had been placed in sort of like a book release group with other people in my genre where we were all going to like get together and support each other because our books were all coming out at about the same time. And so I got in touch with them and I got in touch with my editor. So I got all of my content back from them right away, which was great because some people took like, I don't even know if they ever got their files back, but I got mine back that day. And one of the girls in my group was like, hey, I know this publisher, submit your work. Great. So I did. Got another publishing contract. It's great. It's going really well. On the plus side, lots of people want this book. So, yeah, you know, that's nice affirmation. So that time it got all the way through the release of book two. And then the publisher was just sort of like, I don't know if I want to do publishing anymore. Maybe like next year we'll release book three. And I was like, never mind, just give it back. I don't want to do this anymore. So by then I was with like another publisher for my dystopian series and sort of fast forward through different book series and everything else and get to the end of 2018, December 2018, I had like 16 books under contract.
Oh my
gosh. It was great. Living the dream. I have the next 5 years of my publishing life scheduled. And then within 3 weeks, both of the publishers I was working with shut down. One very amicably, she did it very well. The other one is still like oddly holding on to some people's contracts. And I talked to my agent and it was one of those things where he said, you know, all of your books are now tainted. The first in every series has been released by someone. There's no way I'm going to rehome these with a big publisher. You would be back in basically the same boat. And I was like, well, I am done with this. Like,
yeah,
five publishers in, I'm over it. I'm not going back. No more FBI horror stories. Like, I want nothing to do with it. So it sort of became a choice of, do I want to shelve all those projects or do I want to try indie publishing? And because I am an obstinate human, I decided I was going to go with indie publishing. So since I began putting out my own books, I in, let's say that was probably April of 2019 until now, I now have 19 published books. And I have more on the way. Thank you. And yeah, there are, I'm still working with my agent submitting to larger publishing houses, but it's a matter of getting out all of those things that I had started with all of these people and all of these worlds that I had built with all of this support and just making the choice to stop letting these small presses dictate my future. And so that has been what the last year and a half at this point has been about, is just figuring out how to take that journey on my own.
Nice. Oh my gosh. This is like such the creativity adventure you have been on and navigating. And it sounds like you have come out kind of the other side in such a bigger and brighter way.
It has been. I mean, there are some things that are definitely so much harder when you're doing it on your own. Mm-hmm. I'm very lucky. I have a very supportive husband, which I would be doomed because I don't know how to like work my newsletter programming. I don't know how to update my website. I write stories. I don't know what this is. So he does all of that for me, which is great. He's also my frontline editor so that he makes sure when anyone else sees it, I already look smart. So that's awesome. And then from there, it was really just like figuring out who I wanted to do other things for me and figuring out what outsourcing looks like. How do I hire independent contractors? Like those were really the hardest things to figure out, was how do I pick who to give this precious resource of money to, and how do I arrange that and figure that out? But it is definitely a lot more freeing and I can publish more quickly. I don't have to sit on a book for 2.5 years before it can get published. I can finish it and publish it when I'm ready. And that's great.
Yeah. I guess I'm so not familiar with the publishing world. So the fact that it can take 2 years to get a book published and now you have the capacity to do it much faster, that sounds like kind of the best of both worlds. Like you
take
charge of it and it's now on your timeline versus someone else's timeline.
Yeah. I mean, there are definitely like, if you're with one of the big major presses, there are the advantages of like, those books that are on end caps at Barnes & Noble, they're not there because the star manager liked them. The publishers paid for that space.
Oh, all right.
So like having a big company to back you and buy you an end cap space, that would be the advantage of working with a large press. But most small presses don't have those sorts of resources anyway. Mm-hmm. So you're just paying like probably 50% of your profits for them to do things that you could pretty much do on your own, as long as you're willing to be inventive enough to locate your own resources.
Got it. Okay.
That's fine with me. I can deep dive the internet and find my own resources. I'd rather do that and not deal with them being in charge.
I totally understand that. Makes a lot of sense. To kind of dive into creativity a little bit deeper, when you think about creativity. What does it mean to you to be creative?
I think for me, it means stepping off the beaten path in basically any aspect of your life. Mm. It can be, you know, a recipe or choosing indie publishing or writing a new song or whatever it is. It can also be, you know, figuring out ways to time manage your family. It's just looking at the road ahead and being like, I'm not going to do this. I'm going to go somewhere else. Thank you very much for your time. And I think expanding it to that definition has been very healthy for me to realize, like, oh, I am using these skills. I am doing this. Oh, this is why I think differently than other people. Like, mm. I'm not a weirdo. I'm being creative. And so that is a very good way for at least me to look at it. It helps me function as a human.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it also sounds like you have this awareness of what works and what doesn't work for you as a person. And that's a huge benefit to be able to say, oh, I need to step off of the path to make it work. And I think more people would benefit from giving themselves permission to do that.
And it's hard because sometimes it takes, you know, 5 publishers shuddering for you to like, take the dive and officially step off the path and be like, oh, I have very few options left, so I might as well at this point. But it has never harmed me to mm-hmm. choose to make my own path instead. And that is something that as I am, you know, growing in my 2 creative careers, I am trying to embrace more of, okay, mm-hmm. I don't need to be the cookie cutter. I can do other things. It's going to be okay.
Yeah. How do you think you kind of step out of the cookie cutter? Are there skills that you have learned or things that you tell yourself?
I think so on the publishing side of my life, there are so many like advice things that are just supposed to be known rules for indie authors. Like you're only allowed to publish in one very specific niche genre and never shall you ever move past it. If you write bear shifters, you can only write bear shifters. You will never have wolf shifters because your audience won't follow you. And like, you must publish every 30 days or you have to do this or you have to do that. Or why don't you have 5 known tropes in your books? And my brain is not capable of sticking to things as strict as that for writing. It's just not going to happen. And by stepping out of that and being like, well, it's all YA, but I'm going to write the books I want to write. I've built a healthier audience that crosses more of the YA genres. And yeah, some of them aren't going to go from one book to the other, mm-hmm. but they've actually gotten really good at reaching out to me and being like, hey, I like this one. Should I do this? And I'll be like, that's, unless you want this, it's probably not for you. Go this way, go this way. You'll be okay. And so I have more open lines of communication with them because they know they can reach out to me. For the acting section of my life and the theater mm-hmm. portion, I went to college as a dance performance major. And I very much was like, no, I'm a dancer. That's what I do. I'm a dancer. And it took me a long time to figure out that I don't need that identity to succeed. Mm. And lately, like, I get hired for like an instrumentalist singer more than anything else. And it's like, this is odd. Okay. And ever since I, you know, started really working professionally, I've always been what I like to call the gray wig understudy. Mm. There's always like that one random girl in the ensemble who you're like, oh, she's understudying all the older women. Okay. And that's always kind of been my place. And I think because I'm 5'9" and have a chest. So it's always been like, oh, well, you're not going to be the ingenue anyway. You can just go do that. And for years I sort of resented it. And now I'm like, oh, I have a reserved seat at the table. Like, yeah. I have booked my spot. This is my place. And the children can go do their jump splits. I'm going to understudy Mrs. Potts in the wardrobe and tap dance in the background. Have fun with your hurt hips, kids. And it's, you know,
it's I love it.
Looking at it and being like, oh, this isn't an insult. And, you know, aside from the pandemic, I worked nonstop for 13 years. Mm-hmm. And so it's one of those like, oh, I'm not actually failing. That's That's great to know. It took me a long time to figure it out, but that's great to know.
I mean, what a great ability to like reframe it in that through that lens of like, oh, I don't, all the things they told me in college or that I've learned over the years don't actually really apply. Yeah. I can show up and be myself and have a seat at the table, like you said, or like your place is reserved.
Well, there's also like accepting that sometimes other people's expectations of you that are different than yours is okay. Like it took me forever to be like, oh, I'm getting like the weird bit parts of the funny people that I'm not funny. And then I was like, oh, well, they keep paying me for it. So, okay, I guess I'll be funny. Or they cast me in a show and they were like, oh yeah, you're in the band, you're playing guitar. And I was like, oh, that's not on my instrument list actually. But you know what? I learned guitar during the rehearsal process and it was one of my favorite things. So sometimes it's being like, sure, I will do this thing for you. And then you're like, oh, here's this niche that I didn't know I belonged in. And it's terrifying, but sure, this is great.
Yeah, I love it. And in talking about creativity and all of these things that you have been able to do, I imagine you've probably come up against some blocks or challenges around creativity. And how would you say you have navigated the challenges or blocks?
So Wizard of Oz and I have like this really tight relationship in life. So I actually started writing because years and years ago, I was in a production of Wizard of Oz and I hated my life. I was just miserable. And it was only like a 9-week run, but I was like, I'm not surviving this. And so I started writing as like an outlet of, I can't control what's happening at the theater, but at least I can control what's happening on the page. I'm my own director. I'm my own choreographer. I am my own cast and no one else can touch me. And so I started that as sort of a survival outlet. And that was very helpful to me and has remained very helpful to me in shows where, you know, I'm not doing a lot or I'm massively unhappy. I will totally write backstage at my dressing room station. That's fine. That's like what I need to do to get through being in a dressing room with people I'm not super fond of. Cool. Also, I do, like, if any of my actor friends are listening to this, I do also do it in dressing rooms with people I love. It's not exclusive. But that has become sort of my theater survival mechanism, that and playing instruments and, you know, doing weird cabaret numbers and learning a number a week on instruments just to, you know, have something that I'm in control of. I may not be happy in the show, but I can do the Saturday night cabaret and here's this new instrumental song I'm doing. Like, okay, we're going to make a family band in this cast because I don't like the show we're doing and we're going to play every Saturday night, whether you like it or not, kids. And you just like recruit everyone with an instrument and you're like, oh, you didn't know we were a band? Well, we are. Here's some beer. You'll be happy. But that's sort of always been my thing. And sometimes that's not enough. And so I was in the national tour of Wizard of Oz a few years ago. Always Wizard of Oz.
It is a theme.
It is. I've done the show 4 times. There's like,
oh my
gosh.
Okay.
So much Munchkin land. And I'm 5'9". You know, it happens. But in that situation, it was sort of to the point where I really wanted to do the tour. I was not super keen on doing, you know, 9 months of Oz living on a bus. But I wanted to, like, do the bus, but just not with Oz. I wanted to do the Fiddler on the Roof tour again, but there was no Fiddler on the Roof tour. So you take what you can get. And so in that case, it was one of those, I knew the producer very well, and I went to them, and I was like, I'm going to need something more. Not like, well, first of all, my own bus seat, but also like, I'm going to need something to challenge me. I'm going to need something so that it's important, not that there's a body on the bus, but that my body is on the bus. Because if I'm just going to be trotting around in Munchkin land, there's no point in me going. And so we discussed it and I ended up being the dance captain for that tour, which is a skill set that a lot of people don't have. And so knowing that I had that responsibility, there was something I needed to enter the building for. I had to show up and I had to bring my skill set was very helpful. And, you know, I did end up being very useful because we had to replace cast members while on the road because it's a tour and it happens. Mm-hmm. And so that was very good and very healthy for me to know I am not a dancing flower, although there is nothing wrong with being a dancing flower, you know, but when you're 5'9" and 32, you're like, this is a lot. But it was good for me to know that there was more to what I was doing than what people could see. And so that was very healthy to me. And it dance captaining, you know, it looks like graphs and grids and videos, but it is also a very creatively driven thing because if you have lifts that need to go in and the swing is not capable of doing that lift with the dancer you have who needs to lift them, then reorchestrating and re-choreographing and replotting and mixing and matching and figuring out how you're going to do it and deciding, well, you know, fuck it. Tonight we have a gay couple in Oz. That's just how it's going to be because I have no one left.
Right.
And so that was my creative outlet through that process. And I was writing on the bus every day in my own seat. So there was that too, but being the dance captain and having those responsibilities and that creative power was super healthy for me on that tour.
Yeah, it also really sounds like you like to be challenged and to have a purpose, and that helps you kind of overcome obstacles in creativity.
Especially in theater. Like, if there's no point in me showing up at the theater, if there's no reason you need me in particular to be there, I have a tendency to just not want to. If it's like, oh, I'm doing this thing that I learned how to do and I'm very capable of, and if I don't show up there would be a difference to the production, then I want to be there. If it's like, no one would even notice if I didn't come to work, then it's like, why am I putting on fake eyelashes right now? Like, come on, why am I putting this on my face? So that is very important to me, and like keeping the motivation going when, you know, you're doing 300 some performances a year.
I know. Oh my goodness. The life of the performer is epic. So it sounds like your performing life and writing life has been much of your life. And when you think about kind of your earliest memory of creativity or being creative, what comes to mind?
Well, so I decided I wanted to be an actor when I was three. Because, and this is like, you should never do this with your kids, but my mom was taking her Girl Scout troop to see Arsenic and Old Lace, and one of the girls got sick and couldn't go. So my mom decided to take her three-year-old to Arsenic and Old Lace, which is a show about murder. So really not kid appropriate. But thankfully that all like went straight over my head. And the only thing I really took away from it was that Teddy Roosevelt was allowed to run up and down the stairs screaming to Panama, and I was not allowed to run up and down stairs or to scream to Panama in my house, and that was bullshit. So luckily, he was a very, like, sweet actor because we met him at the meet and greet afterwards, and I crawled up on his knee and wrapped my little arms around his neck, and I was like, what is this magic, and how do I get to do this? And he was like, oh, be an actor and they'll let you do basically anything you want on stage. And I was like, great, I'm in. So from then on, I, you know, decided I was running up and down the stairs screaming to Panama, and I needed to be in dance classes and I needed to learn the recorder. It seemed very important at the time. And so I did my first show when I was four, which was Wizard of Oz. It's always there.
Full circle.
And, So, and so that sort of started the whole theater journey, was just that decision when I was three of, this is what I'm going to do with my life. And I never really changed my mind. The writing aspect actually started when I was 15 or 16. And I oddly graduated high school way too early. So I ended up at community college. It was all very strange. But I took a children's literature course because it fit in with my dance class schedule. And the end project was to write a children's book. And most people were doing like ABC books or picture books with like copy and paste graphics was totally like the standard that was required for the class. But I was in a production of King Lear as Cordelia. So I had a lot of time backstage. And so I started writing this like middle grade novel backstage at King Lear because I was so bored. And so I turned it in as a project. And the teacher was very sweetly like, oh, this is great. You should try and get it published. Looking back, no, it was not that great. It was competent, but not great. But that's sort of why I turned back to it during the misery experience of Oz, was like, mm-hmm. I'm stuck here and I'm not happy. What can I do? Oh, well, here's a thing that helps sometimes. And so it sort of has always gone a little bit hand in hand for me, but that might also just be because I've spent my whole life in theater. So everything goes hand in hand with that for me.
Right. You can add whatever to it. I love it.
I also got like stupid lucky. Mm. Like I met my husband freshman year of college. We graduated and went to a job together. We've always done jobs together. We've never done jobs apart, mm-hmm. both national tours, all of the in-house things. The couple of times one of us has been in it and the other haven't, the companies have known us well enough. They're just like, stay in cast housing, whatever. Mm-hmm. So and I don't think I would have had that sustainability if I didn't have a travel partner. Mm-hmm. I only lived in New York after college for like 3 or 4 months. Mm-hmm. So because I never really had to do the horrible years and years of auditions. Yeah. I just job hopped. I think that also increased my sustainability because I don't know if I would have lived through that. I did mm-hmm. one winter of the 5 a.m. auditions and I feel like I would not have, made it to my 30s mm-hmm. with that game. I don't think I would have lasted that long. It's purely been that I have been fortunate enough to hop between companies who want to keep me employed, and that's great by me.
Yeah, that's amazing, and what a gift. And I think a really great, perspective to say, like, not all theater happens in New York.
Well, and I'm not like a big, huge city person. Mm-hmm. Like, that is not my vibe. Like, I'm much happier I worked in Denali, Alaska for 4 seasons performing up there. So like that is way more like woods and bears and moose is more me than Times Square. So I was very fortunate to find a performing life that embraces that.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, you seem like an individual who is inspired by a lot of things or even just your own imagination, I'm guessing quite a bit. But what would you say, are there people or what inspires you right now?
I mean, at the moment it's hard because most of the weird inspiration that I really get comes from traveling, from hiking, from all of those things that aren't really available right now. Which is hard because, mm-hmm. Usually if I'm dealing with any kind of writer's block, it's like, well, let's go to the nearest mountain and climb some things. And, when you don't want to think about your legs anymore, you'll start thinking about books instead to distract yourself. But I was, booked to camp for 3 weeks this summer and that didn't happen. Mm-hmm. And so that's been hard because it is being outside and being in nature or being in new cities, Europe, Thailand, Greece, whatever, finding those weird little things that trigger your brain to think a different way mm-hmm. has always been huge for me. And when that's not available, words do come more slowly. It is harder and slower to write a book when I don't have those assets available to me. Mm-hmm. When those things aren't around, I torture my husband. And I'm just like, guess what we're doing for the next 4 hours? Want to talk about plot points? And he's like, sure, that's great.
And he's amazing.
Yeah. And he's great. And he like will be basically just like ping pong ideas back and forth. Mm-hmm. And then I'll be like, great, that's perfect. And then, I show up with a manuscript 3 months later and he's like, I thought you said you got an idea from our conversation. I'm like, no, it's in there. It's that part. Don't you see? And he's like, that's not what we talked about at all. Like, well, it worked in my head.
That's how it landed for me. And now it's here.
Yeah. He's like, wait, that was supposed to be sci-fi. Well, it's fantasy now. But there's a specific trail in Alaska that like 3 different book series came out of during our time there. So I love outside. When outside is not available, then, marital, not abuse, utilizing my marriage to my artistic abilities. Because he can't run away.
Brainstorming, yes.
He's stuck with me. He can't get annoyed. He's just going to have to deal with it.
Nice. And I hear that you have quite a big community, a theater community, and kind of you were talking a little bit about the writers' community. How would you say your community impacts or influences your creativity?
I think there's such different worlds. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. So being an actor, especially like in the regional theater scene where you tend to do shorter runs of shows. So mm-hmm. like really you're with a cast for like 9 to 11 weeks, yeah. which isn't a long time, but you get to know people faster and in a more intimate way when the first thing you do at work is take off your clothes. Like that's what you're going to do. Mm-hmm. You walk into a room with your coworkers, you take off your clothes and you get ready for the show. And you also celebrate, you know, birthdays, engagements, Christmas, you drive people to the airport to go to funerals, like you yeah. become this family. And I think that that bond or lack of bond does show on stage and it does drive you to want to get through, you know, the 12-hour rehearsal days, mm-hmm. to want to get through the show where the audience sucks because you have this energy from the people around you. And hopefully, depending on the cast, it doesn't always work that way. Mm-hmm. They have this belief in you and this wonderful sensation of wanting the whole to succeed. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is so creatively empowering when you know you have 22 people at your back who are rooting for you 8 shows a week.
Yeah.
Or 9, depending on where you are. But, you know, a lot of shows a week, these people have your back. And that is great. Mm-hmm. Writing is very different on the outset. So in theater, there's such a limited number of jobs and there's so many people who want them. And so there is this sort of underlying competition, mm-hmm. even with people you love, because, you know, there's one 8-0 Annie. And if everybody wants 8-0 Annie, like, doesn't matter if they're your best friends, they're suddenly your competition and you can right. do it nicely. But there is that underlying tension. That does not exist in the author world, which is, I love it. It's such a relief because even the New York Times bestseller list has 100 slots and it changes every week. Like, whatever, yeah. there's space for everybody. There's millions of books on Amazon. Like, your best friend can have the book that's published right next to yours and it doesn't matter. Mm. There are millions, billions of readers. It's fine. And so there isn't that, like, pushing and prodding and hoarding of information. Mm. No one's going to be like, oh, I'm not going to tell you who the composer is for this song in my audition book because it's mine. It's like, ah, yeah, they're my cover artist. Go to this website. They're great. And so it's a much more open community. Mm-hmm. You don't form those instant deep attachments to people. Mm-hmm. And so creatively, you can look for resources in the community. And if you're like, hey, I'm stuck, like, how do I get these people out of this trunk? Someone will be like, oh, go to this website and this is how you kick a taillight out. But as far as actual creatively, there isn't that support system that you get in theater. Mm-hmm. You can find like a couple writing buddies who maybe you can like message with on Facebook or meet with in person if it's mm-hmm. not a pandemic and you live close to them.
Right.
But it really is a much more supportive creative environment in theater, and in writing it's more they will applaud you when the creativity is done. Mm-hmm. So it's very strange because it is such lonesome work and there isn't that input, but there is the drive to create something that you can show off to your friends, and that mm-hmm. is more the supportive you can do it that you get from the author community.
Nice. Yeah, they hold very different aspects of community support, and it sounds like both really important in your life.
Yeah,
they show up.
Totally. Yeah.
Nice. When you think about everyday issues in your life, and I know maybe they're different from other people, but an everyday issue, how have you used creativity to solve it?
Sure. I actually have a very recent example. It's very odd. I was at the vet today. So I adopted a pandemic kitten because it was getting real rough over here.
Yeah.
I actually ended up with 2 pandemic kittens. So I have these cats and one of the kittens got very, very ill with a deadly disease that vets say you can't cure.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. But I'm an author and I will not believe you because I can deep dive research anything. Like, no. Like, I don't believe you. And so I, you know, went on a deep dive where it was just, you know, researching and researching until someone said that there's a way to survive this. And then researching and researching and, you know, about 12 hours down the Google hole, I found a place that sells medicine that will help this kitten. So I go to the vet today and the vet is like, "What, you did what? You learned how to give injections to your cat from YouTube?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm an author. Like, you go on YouTube for everything. Googling weird things doesn't scare me." And so it was one of those, until I was standing in front of the vet with her just like blinking at me. And she's a vet who like diagnoses this in a lot of cats that have sadly been doomed. That she was like, "Wait, where? What? How did you find this?" And I was like, "Oh, I pulled a total author on this. Like, I went to some corners of the interwebs that normal people don't find because I was like, no, the kitten's not going to die. I don't accept this." And so that is one of the creative skills that I have learned through, you know, getting rid of 5 publishers and researching odd things for books, of like, there is a way to succeed at 99% of things in life. It may not be the path you're on and it may not be the path people point you towards, but you know, there are other answers out there. And that is, you know, my kitten's very grateful, but it is one of the skills that I learned through all of this is like, how am I going to get this character out of this deadly situation and then creating their adventure out. And that is something that, you know, you do whether you're stranded in Thailand with no boat to get where you need to go or your kitten sick of, okay, well, this isn't what the guidebook says, but we'll make it work. And that is a skill that I have learned through my artistic careers.
That's amazing. And like, what a gift to be that persistent, to say, no, I'm not taking what you said to be reality. And I'm going to figure out how to create a different one that works for me.
Yeah. Like figuring out how to order syringes from random, like equine distributors. I don't know.
That's amazing. And now, hopefully this kitten will have another opportunity at life.
Yeah, he's, you know, looking great. He's got some bald patches on his back legs because when I inject him with the medicine, he chews on himself. But other than that, he's doing a great job.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and I gave the vet all the websites I found and she was like, "I'm going to look at this." And I was like, "Yeah, good." So hopefully it's helped other cats down the road because she'll now have this resource to pass on to other people who, you know, are too timid to go into those parts of the internet.
Right. Oh my gosh, that's amazing. And I love it. And what a great example of using creativity to solve an everyday issue.
Weird, but it worked for me. It worked.
Yeah, why not? I mean, if it works, it works.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be perfect, but it needs to just be what it is.
Yeah, you gotta figure out how to like continue the adventure in the novel of your life. Like, okay, well, what's the next step here? How do I get out of this chapter? We gotta keep moving. And so that's when you have to sort of push a few buttons to make sure it happens.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. Well, just to wrap us up, I have one more question for you. And I'm really curious what you feel your secret to creativity is.
Oh, that's hard. I feel like I have two different answers. In theater, the creativity is accepting the absurd and not being afraid and figuring out how to make yourself be and feel important to the situation, because then you are investing your heart and your time and it pushes you forward to grow as you are needed to grow into new roles. And that drives the creativity forward of pushing your career and your art in that direction. For writing, it is more of a definitely fearless, definitely not this is the box I should live in and never shall I leave. But for me, it is accepting that everything is unique and completely done at the same time. That not every sentence you write has to be perfect, just like not every day of your life is going to be perfect. I have a friend who was a headshot photographer. And he'd take pictures. And of course, you know, you're looking back through your pictures and you're like, this isn't right. This isn't right. And he'd just pat you on the shoulder and be like, you know, we'll fix it in post, honey. And that's sort of the lesson you have to learn with writing is you can fix it in post. Not every sentence is going to be perfect. Not every chapter is going to stay in the final book. And so many people get caught with blank page syndrome where they just stare at it and they're like, I can't, it's not going to be right. And just fill the page. Just take the next step forward. Is it the perfect step? Maybe not. Are you going to have to take two steps back? Possibly, but you have to keep moving forward. You have to get the words on the page. You have to take the steps. You have to make the decision, because until you do something, nothing can happen. And that is terrifying. And one of the most wonderful things about writing is you got to keep pushing or you're never going to have a first draft.
Mm-hmm. I love that you have to do something or nothing can happen. I mean, that could be a motto for life,
yeah. Too,
not just writing. I love it. So, oh my goodness. Well, thank you so much for sharing all of these awesome tips and your stories, which are completely nuts. And
thank you.
Like, just awesome how you've turned them around and made them work for you. And if people wanted to get in touch with you, how might they go about doing that?
Sure. So my website is meganorussell.com, and that's Russell with two S's and two L's. And on there, you'll find my blog, my podcast, links to all my books. I am on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. It's Megan O'Russell at all of them. Sometimes the names are in a different order because somehow some other Megan O'Russell got them, but don't worry, if it's about books, it's me. And so you can find me on there. And yeah, the website is a great place to get in touch with me. There is a contact me button. So yeah.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me today. It has been a pure pleasure. And yes, thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Well, thank you for having me on the show. This was fun.
Yay.
Thanks for listening to the Sustaining Creativity Podcast. We'd love to keep in touch, so like us on Facebook and Instagram. We are Sustaining Creativity. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. Tag your friends and your family so they can listen too. We love to hear from you, so leave your comments, reviews, and questions. Tune in Tuesdays for a new episode. And remember, with creativity, anything's possible.